Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Danny Smythe from the morning show is in as the company. It's Cofield, Griffin, front of the show. We're going to talk to Paul Gutierrez inside of 5 minutes. Raiders insider, Raiders reporter for ESPN.com. Probably gets to a little Lakers as well because he's a Barstow, California guy and all of Southern California. It ain't the Clippers. It's the Lakers. They all follow the Lakers, and especially as kids. That's Laker country. So I just wanted to close out what we were talking about at the end of the 4 o'clock hour, betting. Looking forward to the football season. This is going to be the craziest. I think it's going to be the craziest football betting season ever. The biggest ever on college football because, hallelujah, hallelujah, if there is a higher being, I'm looking to the skies. You know I've wanted a playoff since I started doing this stuff. I think the playoff's going to be one of the biggest events in sports every year. And the gambling on that alone and the hype leading to it is going to be incredible. Just incredible. The volume during the season, I think, is going to be nuts. And that even means, like, the great stories. We were just talking about Deion in Colorado. Phil Steele has Colorado finishing 13th in the Big 12. The early odds I saw at multiple sports books, at best, 10th or 11th on the odds board. They're, in terms of volume, the fourth highest bet team to win a national title at some sports books. It's insanity. I mean, I understand the lottery ticket, but come on.
At some point, you got to put that big number aside and actually think about what you're doing.
Wait, do I have any shot at this?
And what did you see last year that you're willing to put money down on this year? Because
you hear about Deion in the transfer portal that everyone wants to go there. He did okay in the transfer portal. They have no depth because he, just like last year, turned off or booted out 40 guys. I mean, you want to talk about something that I think is overlooked by the casual fan. Do you realize you can look at your 22 and go, oh, well, you know, and especially your stars, go, oh, this is a good team. You're like, yeah, the 22 guys don't play the whole season.
No.
22 guys don't just play in a game. Like your roster needs to be 35, 40, 45, low 50s deep. People have to play special teams. You got to rotate guys in and out from a freshness standpoint. I mean, this is – do they have 35 guys that are high-level players? I'm not sure. National championship. Okay. So ridiculous. And now I've got, because it turned on me, is that Arizona football against Colorado football bet for the next 2 years. I didn't know Jed Fish. I'd never even factored that in. That you'd have this DeBoer to Alabama, you know, Saban out, DeBoer to Alabama, Jed Fish to Washington, new coach Brent Brennan at Arizona.
There's a million moving pieces every spring.
But that's what, I mean, when you make multi-year bets, that's what happens. And you do it before all the dust is settled, so who knows. And now a two-year bet by our buddy DeMond also means that he may be getting Deion this year, and then Deion's gone. Mass exodus on the roster, new coach, who knows what it's like. So I feel okay. I feel pretty good now about that bet.
You should.
That Brennan. But who knows? Arizona could have a great year, right? Get me out to a good start, win 9 games, and then, you know, UCLA is like, yeah, Deshaun Foster in 1 year didn't work out. We're going to hire Brent Brennan. He went to school here. It's craziness. Paul Gutierrez is covering the Raiders. He's at minicamp this week, ESPN.com. Paul, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening, guys? A lot of news happening in the world?
Yeah, we were just talking a little college football betting and the craziness with the coaching carousel. And we spent the first 2 hours pretty much a minute-by-minute breakdown of Joey Chestnut being out of the hot dog eating contest. It's a very big deal on this show, especially when Big Adam is in, and I love it too. So it's, but I do want to get to one of the other hot-button issues before I get to the Raiders and what you're seeing here the last couple weeks. And, you know, I told everyone a couple minutes ago, you're a Barstow, California guy. Southern California, I mean, it's Laker country. It just is, and you witnessed all the good times. What do you think right now of what's going on? They just got turned down by a college coach, and now Lakers fans are like, what the this is embarrassing.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to put it, especially for a franchise like the Lakers. You know, I mean, they should be able to go get whoever they want. And if you're getting turned down by Danny Hurley, I mean, what does that tell you? And I heard you guys talking about earlier about the potential machinations, and was there really an interest, or was it kind of, you know, it's strange that an organization like the Lakers could actually get played like that if that's what happened. But it is kind of still a mom and pop shop, and there's some similarities to the Raiders in that sense that, you know, it's not a corporation. It's still run by the same family that it was run by a long time ago. And, you know, I grew up in Barstow, like you mentioned, a child of the Showtime Lakers, watching Magic and Kareem and Big Game James and Byron Scott and Coop and Rambis and all those guys. And then when I worked at the LA Times, I covered a little bit of Shaq and Kobe, the Lake Show Lakers, and saw that up close and personal. So now to see the different iterations of the franchise to this, where, you know, a college coach, granted the most successful college coach right now, is turning it down. It's strange. It's embarrassing. It's a little bit of everything, and because especially when they should be able to go and get whoever they want, just on name recognition alone.
Were you surprised at the numbers you saw that were offered to Hurley?
I mean, define surprise, right? I mean, I'm surprised if anybody getting offered $60 million to coach, but that's not the market anymore. So I guess that was low for what you expecting a contract offer to be. But, it's all monopoly money anymore anyway. So if you're really, you know, if you're that franchise and if that's what they were offering, well, then maybe they weren't really all that serious to begin with. Because, again, it goes back to what you really honestly, what I believe is, that kind of a franchise should be able to go out and get whoever they want, and money should not be an object.
So let's go back to what you heard earlier, and Danny had a question of sorts, and I think you've been around long enough to answer this one. This whole, hey, maybe this was a work with Woj, and I know Woj works for ESPN, so I don't want to get you in trouble, but Woj and Hurley, and I posed the question to Danny, like, do you think it's ever happened where a coach was a really good friend with a media member, and the media member did a favor for a coach? I mean, my guess is you've probably seen something along those lines, right?
You're right. I do work at ESPN.
Yes.
so
that's why I
didn't
I asked
do that for Lincoln Kennedy when I wrote the book with Lincoln. We weren't trying to get Lincoln a job anywhere, yeah. But I mean, you know, it's a dirty business, and I'm not accusing anybody of doing anything, but it wouldn't shock me. I would hope that I would never do anything like that. And again, not accusing anybody of doing it, but, you know, at what cost? You know, at the cost of your reputation, or does it really matter? I don't know. There's so many lines that get crossed anymore, guys, because it's not really a bright red line anymore for professionalism. It's, you know, are you doing favors? Are you trying to get a scoop? What are you doing? You trying to stay relevant? I don't know. It's interesting that that's even a topic, but it's not surprising.
Yes. Paul Gutierrez is with us from ESPN.com. He covers the Raiders, as you mentioned, long background of covering sports in Vegas and in L.A. All right, let's go to something that would be boring by a headline standpoint, but I find it fascinating, and I know Raider Nation does. This has been an off-season of surprises from this standpoint. We all thought Raiders would go, you know, highfalutin in the draft, and hey, it's time to get a right tackle, but I saw your notes today and your story on Thayer Munford. I mean, hey, it's June, and he's at right tackle.
And they've got an undrafted rookie backing him up. So, you know, he's their guy.
Yeah.
And as Antonio Pierce told us at the start of the offseason program, that basically, look, he told him, look, it's yours to lose. So go out there and do what you got to do. What was interesting today, guys, was, you know, Max Crosby is always just barking, barking, barking. He's trying to get these guys better. He's trying to get their motors up and running and everything. And I saw Thayer Munford get kind of tired of his mouth, and he pushed him.
Nice.
And he pushed him back. Now, they weren't really going to throw down or anything. I mean, they're not in pads or anything. So it actually may be more annoying than anything that you can't really hit somebody. All you're doing is kind of like brushing up against somebody with no pads on. But, yeah, Thayer stood up and pushed him. And I did a big story on Max last year before they went to Detroit. And Thayer was one of my better quotes in there. He says he couldn't stand him. He said, I can't stand him. He's always
really?
He's just under my skin. But he said it with a smile on his face because he couldn't stand him because he just never stops talking. He never stops going. He's got that motor that just will not quit. So when I saw that today, that story, that anecdote, that quote that the Thayer gave me last October, boom. I was like, oh, there it is. That's what he's talking about. And the fact that he pushed Max, I was like, look at this. You never would have saw Michael Mayer pushing last year during training camp when he got his baptism by fire. So that said a lot to me today.
Well, I'm sure the coaches welcome it. You know, within reason, you don't want to freaking destroy your right tackle and break his confidence. But, I mean, let's be as tough as it, you know, tougher than any game will be and go trial by fire. You got to deal with it, man.
And that's exactly what they do, right? I mean, you know, it's cliche and it's kind of trite, but when people say, oh, iron sharpening iron, la, la, la. Well, I mean, that's anytime you talk to anybody on the offensive line about what they want to do, they talk about, hey, man, for me to get better, if I'm going against Max Crosby every single day in practice, how am I not going to get better? I mean, it goes back to you know, generations ago when Cliff Branch, rest in peace, he would tell me that he got better because he was going against Lester Hayes and Mike Haynes and Willie Brown in practice. How are you not going to get better?
Now, the other really interesting thing in your story, and we're talking to Paul Gutierrez, your notes on Thayer Munford, you know, entrenched at right tackle, is that he's having to show some position flexibility here, and his right tackle numbers, we know, you know, he wasn't as good at right as he was at left. I mean, yep. The numbers from a year ago, they weren't very good on the right side.
Especially when you compare them to other right tackles that played a similar number of snaps, right? I mean, he was in the 30, 31st, 32nd, you know, ranked right tackle that played there in terms of what ESPN stats are. Now, you can do anything you want with numbers. And as an ESPN employee, as we established earlier, you know, I've got to go by ESPN stats and info. And when it comes to win, pass block win rates and run block win rates, and for those things, and it's in the story, you know, it's not very good when compared to other right tackles that played a similar number of snaps. So obviously there's something to improve on there.
I'm going to draw a comparison at another position to your school, UNLV. And I think sometimes people take for granted production. So with UNLV, Jade Maiava left. He was really good. And I know people are like, oh, you know, how dare he believes he can play at Georgia or USC. Don't care about that part. He was really good. And, you know, we just heard today, I think it was Phil Steele had Ricky White, second team All-American, you know, wide receiver production. Yep. It's based on the quarterback getting the ball, and now they have two guys who are in. Maybe they'll be good between Sluka and Haj Malik Williams. But the long lead-in, Josh Jacobs was really good. And I think there are Raider fans out there who kind of take that for granted. What do we expect from Zamir White, and what are organization people telling you, hey, we believe in this guy for this reason?
Well, they believe in him from the production standpoint, and granted, it was a very small sample size those last three, four games when he rushed for almost 400 yards, and they showed that he could do it. What I think the concern is, or actually what I believe the concern is, and what I know the concern is how are they going to replicate that leadership style in that locker room? There was no doubt that Josh Jacobs was a leader in that locker room. And that is important in this alpha male world of professional football. So, if Zamir White, that's just not his personality, regardless. When we talked to him a couple of weeks ago after OTAs, he said that he's got to restart that. He's got to figure out a way to get that leadership, get that voice going again, because he hasn't had to have that since he was in college at Georgia himself. So, that's the big piece that's going to be, to me, most intriguing. You know, production is production, right? I mean, a new offense, you got an offensive coordinator who authored top two rushing offenses in the NFL the past 2 years. So if that carries over, fine, great. What I'm interested in, though, with Zamir is that extra piece, that leadership that's needed in the locker room, because that's a huge piece that's going to be missing with Josh Jacobs now in Green Bay.
Did you get to watch the tight ends today at minicamp?
They were there. I wasn't really focusing on them. I was focusing more on the quarterback battle and trying to see who looked not as bad as the others when they were out there today. Granted, it's mini camp, and you know, Max Crosby said it ad nauseum at the podium. Hey, there's only so much you can. You take it with a grain of salt. It's mini camp. There's no pads on. You're going against your own guys. But I did not pay attention to the tight ends. I do plan on doing more of that tomorrow, especially the receivers with Devontae out there, because Devontae wasn't out there a lot today with the ones when they were going 11-on-11. To meet the pass catchers, I want to see exactly what that looks like.
Including OTAs, what's been the impression, what's been the buzz around the tight end combination?
Just the buzz, really, is Mayer looks a little more, I hate to say more fit, because that's to infer that he wasn't fit last year. He just looks more into it. He looks like he's having more
driven.
And he said that himself. It's fun.
Yeah.
Bowers, he glides. When he runs, he glides. And I hate to always compare players to animals or anything like that, but it reminds me of a gazelle. He's covering so much ground with his long strides, and it doesn't look like he's huffing. You know, like when you think a tight end's running, you kind of, oh, okay, I'm watching him run, and I can feel it. With him, you don't feel it. He's just moving and gliding across the field. So it's an interesting contrast between those two, but they both do have soft hands. Mayer almost had a gorgeous catch at the back of the end zone today, but couldn't quite pull it down. But, yeah, that was my impression today of those two guys, and through minicamp and everything else, too, is, you know, again, you've got an offensive coordinator who's used to having kind of that dual-threat tight end with Cole Kmet and with the Bears. So now he's got two of them. You got, you know, they got weapons all over the offense. It's just a question of who's going to be delivering the ball and how it's all going to work.
Paul Gutierrez, ESPN.com, is with Danny Smyth, Steve Cofield, Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Okay, tell me if I'm wrong on this, and maybe I'm just using old-school standards. I feel like on the quarterback thing, they signed Gardner Minshew to a pretty decent-sized deal. They didn't have to do that. There were other guys out there that could have brought in journeyman quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks for like $8, $9 million, maybe on a one-year deal. I feel like the investment they made, he has to have the first shot at starting. And, you know, Minshew, do we really have a battle here?
Yeah, we do. Okay. And the fact of the matter is this, that throughout OTAs, and again, we got to keep this in perspective too, is, and I always have to remind myself, I got to remind anybody I'm talking to, even my editors when we're talking about this story with a quarterback competition, is through OTAs, we got to watch 3 of 10 practices.
Oh.
And you know what I mean? We're not really seeing all of OTAs.
Yep.
Now we are seeing all of minicamp. So in those 3 of 10 OTAs we saw, Aiden was getting the first snaps, and he was out there running with the ones.
Wow.
Today, they both got run with the ones, but Gardner got more of it. Neither one of them really distinguished themselves. I asked Nate Hobbs what he thought of the quarterback battle today, and he had one of the all-time great quotes. He talked about how Gardner Minshew basically pump-faked him out of his jock, and he didn't know what to do.
Huh.
And so Gardner Minshew pointed at him and said, and it pissed me off, because he said Gardner has that moxie and that belief in himself to be able to try to pump fake somebody on 3rd and long, and he got him. So that, to me, there's just these weird little things about Gardner that you know, he doesn't – I don't know if he's a good practice quarterback so much as he's more of a gamer kind of a guy, whereas Aiden is what you see is what you get. So, you know, there's no doubt that Aiden deserved the opportunity to take those first snaps entering the offseason competition. But, you know, by the end of it, it's going to come to fruition, and we'll see.
This quarterback battle, is it something that we could see one of them potentially be named the starter coming out of training camp, or is this something that we're going to see probably go through preseason, and it might be right before or right after Game 3 of preseason where it's actually announced who's the number one?
Yeah, it's going to depend upon if somebody separates themselves, right? You know, there's no doubt that Antonio Pierce has a warm spot in his heart for his self-proclaimed BFF, Aiden O'Connell. I mean, he benched Jimmy Garoppolo for him. And then, you know, down the stretch, Aiden played really well those last 4 games. 8 touchdown passes, one interception. Raiders went 3-1. And to me, the most intriguing part of that is that one loss was to Gardner Minshew and the Colts. So that competition probably started there. It's going to go on until somebody really separates themselves, and I think that's pretty probably the best way to do it. And as I wrote last week, it's the battle between the two of them. It's more mutual admiration society than like this cutthroat deal. It's not Montana and Young, or even for somebody as old as me, Pat Hayden versus Vince Ferragamo. You know, it's nothing like that. But it's interesting to watch it. And in talking to the defensive guys today, whether it was Max Crosby or Nate Hobbs, or even, you know, I asked Jacoby the same thing. And, you know, he said, yeah, those guys, they're going at it. They're really battling. And we'll see what happens. Although Jacoby did acknowledge that there's you know, still some growing pains with everybody learning this offense, and you saw that today.
Does minicamp look different from an organization or attitude standpoint going from McDaniel to Pierce, McDaniels to Pierce?
Yes, and it's also different from where we can watch it.
I've heard that.
Walk around and watch them stretch and watch different position drills and everything like that. Yeah. It just, the guys seem like, and this is not necessarily a shot at Josh McDaniels or Dave Ziegler or anything like that, but the guys are actually just out there kind of playing now, and they're not, like, looking over their shoulders and worried about things. I mean, a perfect example would be, and I don't even want to name the player, but it was 2 years ago, the season was ending, and, you know, being a reporter, you're in a locker room, you're trying to get phone numbers or contact information for players for the offseason in case something happens. And this player literally looked like he saw a ghost because he was so afraid to give me his number or contact information because of how they were with the Patriots.
Right.
So it was just stunning to me. I mean, you're a grown man. Yeah. You know, you could talk to whoever you want, I imagine, but he's like, yeah, they really frown upon that because that is the Patriot way, and that's the way they did it in New England, and it was successful there. So to not have that track record and to have that hanging over their heads, you really feel it. There's like a weight literally has been lifted off. And you felt that the first day we went in the locker room, right, when they had put up the hoop and they were letting people walk across the logo and all that craziness in there. It just, I don't know if you can really put a price on that, but to answer the question, long answer to your short question, yes, there's definitely a difference, and it seems like they're having more fun. Now, is that translating to wins? We'll see.
We'll see, right? On you know, the funny thing on Josh McDaniels running a tight ship, like, I have ultimate respect for organizations where nothing gets out. The problem was he was trying to run a tight ship, and then they had leaks all over the place where information would get out. Like, what are you doing? Like, it was turning into the opposite where people were like, well, screw this. Now I'm going to kind of turn on him. It is, you do have to give credit. There's a lot of flaws with Belichick, but Belichick does it the best because for the most part until the very end, like, there were no leaks. Everyone was going in the same direction.
Well, because winning is the ultimate deodorant, right? And whether it's the Tuck Rule, Spygate, Deflategate, whatever other help they had along the way, you know, they were winning. So how can you really turn your nose up at that if you're winning? If the Raiders had been winning, then I don't think anybody would have had an issue with it. The fact of the matter was that this generation of players was not responding to that type of coaching and or leadership the past 2 years.
We got to close on this one. We had to talk martial arts in Barstow, California. Gutierrez is the name, going back to, you know, to your dad. I saw you include William Zabka on a tweet. Please tell me he answered. I love this tweet. This is great.
Yeah, he hasn't answered me in a while. We used to DM every now and again, so I don't know if he's too big time now. There was a time when I had more Twitter followers than him, but then Cobra Kai launched, and then he became a superstar again, so more, you know, God bless him. I've become actually pretty, I'm not friendly. I've become pretty friendly with Yuji, who plays Chosen,
really?
And also a lot of the cast of Warrior from Netflix now,
no
Shannon
way.
Lee, Bruce Lee's daughter. Just saw her a couple weeks ago. She was up at Bruce Lee Night at the Giants, and my wife Amy was hosting the night. So you're right. I went there and paid my respects and got a selfie with Shannon as well. But yeah, it's. I wish William Zabka would have responded, but we'll move on from there.
I love that you retweeted. Someone had posted name a film where the bad guy won, which is
yes.
Why Karate Kid on a Cobra Kai is so fascinating. Because when you watch Cobra Kai, you're like, you know, I don't know if Danielson was the right side in this one. Maybe I should have been rooting for Johnny the whole time.
Well, then they go into that whole episode, right, in one of the early seasons of Cobra Kai, where Johnny tells his side of the story, and he's like, you know what, from a different point of view, I see what he's talking about. And it's interesting because Yuji, who plays Chosen, we went to dinner with him. And I know Adam's a huge fan as well. Adam was really mad at me because when the Raiders played in Seattle a couple weeks ago, we went up there and we went to the restaurant. Adam didn't come with us. And Yuji has his own Hawaiian food restaurant up there, and he came and sat and talked with us the entirety of the meal, my wife, myself, and some friends that live up there. So,
Damn. Yeah,
it's interesting to get that sense. And you know, Karate Kid is timeless, it's ageless. And it really upsets me because I was 14 when that movie came out.
Yeah.
I was in martial arts. I could have played Daniel LaRusso in L.A., but you know what? Life had different plans for me.
Yeah, well, life offered a chance to pull off a crane kick against Derek Carr, but Willie Ramirez had to step in and stop that whole thing. I wanted to see that magic, but... We can go out on that
No
point.
Comment.
Yeah, no comment.
No comment.
There you go. I'm getting you in trouble again. All right, Paul. I'll talk to you, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
There he is, Paul Gutierrez. Actually a legit martial artist.
Really?
And I wasn't making it up. Yeah,
well, no, I just...
His family, you know, he competed, and his dad had a martial arts studio in Barstow, California. And so,
nice.
So, yeah, when there was a little heated exchange a couple years ago with Derek Carr, and we could have seen something. But someone had to step in and bring calmer heads. Why? Right? We just talked about it, an hour ago about Barkley. You're talking about punching people all the time. Come on. You got the heckler fan in Dallas? Go after him.
Yeah, let it happen.
Yes. Will this lead to winning? The more relaxed atmosphere, the players being happy? Or is that just such a minor part of this whole thing in terms of winning in the NFL?
I don't necessarily think the one equals the other, but I definitely think they won't feel like they're walking on eggshells the moment they step in the building. So, I mean, it could help, but ultimately it's the play on the field. It doesn't matter.
It does suck to go to work, and I'm not saying – actually, I've been talking a lot about the workplace here, that it actually is pretty chill and we're allowed to do the shows the way we want to do the shows. So, workplace environment can matter.
Absolutely.
Talent means even more, and execution is the ultimate in the National Football League.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
If you missed Paul Gutierrez on the show, we'll have that archived up at LV Sports Network. Afterwards, we put up the entire show, and then there's a best of on the Cofield and Company page. You can go to at Steve Cofield, at Cofield and Company. You can find the link to the audio page where we put all of the archives up, and most are out there. All right, so we got an Aces game coming up. Aces are not playing real well right now. I think if I have it right, they lost their third game last year, July 30th. They came out of the gates 23-2. They've already lost four games. And I was out there on Friday night. First of all, that's a wild scene. On a Friday night in Vegas with the Aces, because the Aces are drawing so well. You know, they're getting between 9,500 and 11+. So the Mandalay Garage swells. Then you had Zach Bryan. I always get his name wrong. Zach Bryan was at T-Mobile, and I think people were looking to get maybe cheaper parking, so they're parking all the way down to Mandalay and walking down, which is a pretty good walk.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's tough to get into that garage, especially, you know, then the Aces fans are all there on a Friday night. They're taking on a pretty good team with a bunch of stars in the Storm. So, yeah, there was a good energy in the building. And then Danny, the Aces just – they came out. They weren't ready defensively. Asia Wilson had a rare kind of sloppy first half. She exploded in the second, but she was kind of the only one. Jackie Young didn't shoot well. Plum was solid. Not a lot of help beyond that. The bench, not a lot of scoring. It's a weird time right now. ESPN now has – keep in mind what the narrative has been with the Aces, especially on this show at times, not for me. This is boring. The Aces are just so much better than the rest of the league. They're 5-4. I usually ignore power polls because I think they're stupid and over, you know, reactionary. Aces are 7th in the power poll. Probably a little low.
Yeah, they're not a bottom half of the league team.
I mean, they lost to the Atlanta Dream. Seattle, again, solid team. Maybe a 25-win team out of 40. Kind of punked them. And when Seattle needed it in the fourth quarter, because the Aces got to 54-51, trailing going to the fourth, Seattle's like, all right, you're not making any more threes. So I think they went 0 for 7 from 3 in the fourth. Seattle caught fire. Bye-bye.
And then we saw it again on Sunday, too, against L.A. They got out to, I think it was a 15-0 lead.
Yeah.
And I look away to catch the NBA game. I look back, and all of a sudden it's tied at 30. So the two things that we've seen from the Aces over the past couple years, explosivity and defense. And neither one are there.
I don't think they're very deep right now. Like, Chelsea Gray's absence is a really big deal. They had bench issues last year. Their bench is not deep right now. They've also got injuries on the bench. And then, you know, the players were pretty – they were mad. But they're like, you know, we'll get it right. That was Plum and Asia Wilson were available. Then Becky Hammond comes in, and it was like really short statements – kind of stunted speech. I think she was trying to contain herself. We have Becky after that game on Friday night, and she's just like, F this, F that.
I can't articulate enough how badly teams want to beat us. We've just had a very satisfactory show up and think we're going to win the game. Ken, if you wanted to, what's the excuse in the first and second quarter? Were we tired then? Every team has to push through this. This is way more mental than anything. Is there a fatigue factor? Sure, I'll buy that.
Yeah. So second cut was, hey, you know, the team being affected by fatigue, you know, later in the game. And she's like, well, what about the first and effing second quarter? However she said it. And before that was, I mean, she said it straight out. She's having trouble getting it through to the team. Like, hey, everyone's coming for you now. They're not liked around the league. The Liberty, I think, kind of whined after the finals. Like, hey, the Aces were disrespectful and cocky. Okay, deal with it. But that doesn't mean that every team is like, right, to the Aces, we're going to get your ass. Everyone's coming for them. And I pointed out last week that if people got a chance to watch the game against the Dream, like, the Dream were getting in their faces, talking trash. I think the other thing is, like, hey, coaches are telling people, give them some of their own freaking medicine. Don't get intimidated. Let's see how they react. So, interesting time. And now, this is an angle. Do we have L? Give me some L Duncan, who's really tired of just Caitlin Clark talk.
And all there is right now is a culture war. It is a them versus you, a you versus them. There is othering. It is gross. It is not fun. It is not engaging. There's no nuance in this situation anymore. So I'm done waiting for the next time, because she's going to get fouled again, guys. The idea of talking about the W at this point, exhausting. I'm already exhausted, and we're a quarter of the way through the season.
So weak. So weak. By the way, she didn't even know this was before the Olympic team thing came. So now Caitlin's the star again. And I, you know, when she said that last week, I'm like, there's plenty of storylines. I mean, not everyone's going to talk about them. Not everyone's familiar with the WNBA. We'll hit it. But I've said this forever. I keep saying that throughout the show. But when it comes, the coverage you want, when it comes, it's going to be delivered like it is for every other sport we cover.
Yeah, I was listening.
So it can be harsh. Yes. That's the way it's going to go.
Exactly. I was listening to your show yesterday, and you, I think it was you, made a great point that, like you just said, with good coverage is also going to come bad coverage. You can't ask for one and say you don't want to hear the other.
That was actually Justin Watkins. I'll give him credit.
Okay.
Our legal insider is a big sports fan, and listen, it's happened. It's happened a million times. I will, you know, for audiences who were in and out, I saw the same thing happen with Ronda Rousey on the Rise Up. It was a great job. You're an icon. You're unbeatable. And then she developed some enemies in the fight game and amongst fans. And when it didn't go so well, oh, it came at her. And Aces were getting it. Women's basketball will get it. You want us to break down the game? We're going to break it down. Right? It's not going to – and that's when you've arrived. Mm-hmm. Right? When you get critical coverage, that's when you've arrived. This is what you want. And I got to say this. We're the only ones with this angle. I always love when people, no one's thought of this. That's what you see a lot of Caitlin Clark. I'm the first person with the original thought. If I'm Mark Davis, and I guess I'm happy that the games are mostly sold out for the rest of the year, I'm going to make my money. I'm going to make even more if the Aces have an incredible season and win a championship. We've talked about this with the NBA in the past. Oh, I don't know, like Major League Baseball All-Star Games. Does Mark Davis want four Aces on the Olympic team?
How are they
going to win a championship? We're talking about fatigue right now. Becky Hammon's dropping F-bombs. They're going to – that group, four of them, are going to go to the Olympics. They're going to come back and be able to win a title? Now, I don't think MD is going to come out and say it, but I wonder behind the scenes if Mark is like, well, great. Guess we're going to help grow the game, win a gold. Got no shot to win a title, though. They're going to come back exhausted.
Obviously, he is happy with his players being on the team because that's what you want. That shows that you're doing the right thing. You're putting teams together with a lot of success. Your players are getting better, all that stuff. They get to represent the country. But, yes, that month off where they could be resting, especially since they're going into the Olympic break having, I think it's something like 12 games in 20 days or 11 games in 20 days.
Yep.
they're going to need the rest.
And when they come out of it, what do you think the season's going to be like? It's going to be 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, and if my math
USA, USA! Okay, I mean, great. Because then the flip side of it is, what a lot of people are saying now around the Caitlin Clark thing is like, well, they're going to kick ass anyway. I mean, Caitlin Clark is a 12th player. I mean, they're going to win the gold easily. Okay, well, then how about you take two aces or three? Now, unfortunately, that sucks for one of the aces players who really wants to go to the Olympics. I got to say, listen, I don't want this to happen, but I think it's a break for the organization if Chelsea Gray is like, I'm not healthy.
I don't think she should go. Because, like I said earlier in the show, if she comes back a week before the break, plays maybe two games, and then goes to the Olympics versus, hey, maybe if you're well enough to go to the Olympics after having two warm-up games, could you have came back and played for your domestic team more than two games? And that's ultimately what it's about, because you're being paid to play for the Aces, but if you're hurt, you're hurt, and that's fine. Sit out until you are healthy enough to play. However, if she already announced that she's going to come back before the Olympic break, who knows how long that is. If it's right before the break, I don't know. You probably should have came back a little earlier or skipped the Olympic break to rest more.
364-1100. 364-1100. Caller 7. I did not give away our second pair yet, did I? Lakers in town. I wanted to make sure I wasn't putting you in a bad position. Sorry, buddy. You got to come up with your own set of tickets. Griffin will take care of you here. 364-1100. Caller 7. Pair tickets, Lakers Golden State, October exhibition, right? Lakers always come to Vegas, put on a show. T-Mobile is the spot. Tickets are on sale now. AXS.com, AXS.com. 364-1100, caller 7. Let me continue here because I saw a couple good angles on this that we got to throw out there. Back to Caitlin Clark not making this team. Four aces are on it. What is it? Three Mercury players, two are older players. Great. With Diana Taurasi, DT, and Brittany Griner. Two from the Liberty. Storm Link, Sun, one. That means there are several teams that don't have anyone.
Half the league.
Well rested. Well rested. We talked earlier in the show, Danny. What's the goal? 100% no other concerns. Win a gold. Win a gold, but also help grow the game. Then throw in TV people are paying a lot of money. I bet you there's a bunch of TV people who are like, no Caitlin Clark? You know how much money we pay for this? What are you, nuts? We had a comment from one of the executives with Team USA who basically said, that first option I gave you, right? Which is, it's all about winning the gold. That's it. There's no other concerns. Okay. So if this gets to a point where you have a player or two drop out, they still don't add Caitlin Clark. If you're on the TV side, are you like, you know what? We're going to add Caitlin Clark. Oh, no. What? TV can't control us on the roster? We're not. She's on the broadcast team. This was an idea from Bomani Jones. I got to give him credit. I wish I had thought of it. Yeah. And she doesn't have to be a color ass. That she's, you know, she's never done it before. I'm not saying this job's easy. In fact, it's incredibly hard. I'm kidding. But what great TV it would be. Hey, let's go to the sideline. Caitlin Clark's got Diana Taurasi after the first quarter.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I just went for a quick check to social media. I'm like, has anything happened over the last... Of course, something's always happening over the last 3 hours we've been on the air. Yes. So if I can squeeze it in. Boy, that... The allegations of a Woj Hurley work of the Lakers is building steam. And then Aaron Rodgers' absence today is getting people worked up. But let's finish up the point. No Caitlin Clark on the Olympic team. I mean, NBC's got to run with this idea. Put Caitlin Clark on the broadcast team. So then she's there for every USA game and you get the eyes. Bad idea?
No, I don't think so. But
you think she would do it, or she's too respectful, she doesn't want to step on toes and steal the show and probably further the dislike of the vets even more?
No chance she does it.
Damn it. She's too classy.
Yeah.
Which even me saying that, then people are like, no, she's not. Did you see her talk trash on the floor? She's doing head throws. Okay.
I think you would get everybody who said that she doesn't deserve to be on the team, you would get them attacking maybe not her, but definitely the broadcast of why do they have her instead of getting one of the other vets who didn't make the team. Something along those lines.
She's pretty good. I actually think she could do it.
I'm sure she could.
I mean, it is one of the things that doesn't get pointed out enough, that she could be a jackass through this whole thing and just be fanning the flames, which may be more exciting for all of us, but she's very diplomatic.
Yes, she's... She definitely watches. She's conscious of what she says, and she's trying not to ruffle any feathers throughout this entire first month in the league.
Which, by the way, I'll throw in, one of the jobs to me when you're an athlete, one of the jobs of that school is to prep you for life in dealing with adversity, dealing with making public statements. Maybe you're never public again, right? After your basketball career. Or whatever career, but things come up at work where you got to be diplomatic and handle things come up in public, right? That's one of the things you should be trained for. In the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Hey, Joey Chestnut is out of the Nathan's contest. I probably should stop giving him the free pop, the hot dog eating contest, because he wants to push veggie dogs. Major League Eating is like, no, you can only push one brand. So right now he's sidelined. He's mad.
He is.
He's gutted.
He released a three-part statement on Twitter about 2 hours ago. Starts off with, I was gutted to learn from the media that after 19 years, I'm banned from the Nathan's July 4th hot dog eating contest.
Freaking Shea Brothers. Freaking, come on, man. You got to tell them.
I love competing in the event. I love celebrating America with my fans all over this great country on the 4th, and I have been training to defend my title.
Unreal.
To set the record straight, I do not have a contract with MLE or Nathan's, and they are looking to change the rules from past years as it relates to other partners I can work with. This is apparently the basis on which I'm being banned, and it doesn't impact the July 4th event. Sadly, this is the decision Nathan's and Major League Eating are making, and it will deprive the great fans of this holiday's usual joy and entertainment.
That right there is the money shot, because we are going to be deprived. Okay, so let's go. We already have Caitlin Clark on the NBC broadcast team. Let's go next level here. Who's going to be the hero and fight back? I can't believe I'm going to say this. Who's going to be the hero and fight back against evil MLE? These champions of labor, I'm going to pick from who puts up the money and wants to televise a chestnut hot dog eating event against, I don't know who the opponent would be. I was thinking a bear, but I think he may have done that already. Is it Elon Musk, or is it the Saudis and Turkey El-Sheikh who's been pushing boxing? Don't laugh! We need a hero to step up head-to-head, same time.
Absolutely.
And I love these guys who do the competitive eating, and the guys now, they'll probably do like 55 hot dogs, and then Chestnut, you know, 5 minutes later, they flick it on, and he's like, 71, I'm still the greatest, and I just made $500,000, you cheap, you know what.
See, what they should do, if somebody can do this for Joey, they put it on right before the Nathan's hot dog contest, because then you already see Nathan, so you don't want to watch the rest of them.
Stop with that hot dog pop, okay, that's enough. They don't pay us. They're not paying Chestnut enough. No more free publicity.